Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this episode is Cues of the Force, Quantums of the Force. No, it's Questions of the Force. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Knapsack. I've got answers for the quantums, the questions, the quantums, all of the names, the Q names I'm making up, apparently. Good stuff here today. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, we got some really fun and really different questions today. So we are eager to get to the Qs so we can discover our own A's. We want to let you know, as always, that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible, another A. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4Center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Very, very soon, we're talking about the book that we've been recommending for an extremely long time. That's Padawan by Kirsten White. So I decided, why not go to my bookshelf, Ken, and see what other books we are due to read. So we are also recommending Path to Deceit by Tessa Grattan and Justina Ireland. It is the new, I'm abusing that word, the newish adventure in the High Republic publishing initiative. So if you want to check out Padawan or Path to Deceit, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4Center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4Center for your free audiobook. There are so many Q's and so many A's, and we're up to another A, Ken, and that is our new segment called Ask.
That's right. The Ask. Boom, boom. Get some Justin Hayward, Moody Blues doing that theme song apparently in my head there. Yeah, we got a big ask. It's a big ask. We understand it's a big ask because, hey, YouTube isn't for everyone. But we are building up our YouTube channel after years of having it. I know a lot of people, you'd always write us, hey, how about some more stuff on YouTube? Well, that is coming. We've been rebroadcasting podcast episodes and having the fun live Q&As. We are continuing to do that, but we're asking, hey, maybe would you consider heading over to our YouTube channel? Give us a subscription, hit that sub button, hit that bell so you get the notifications and never miss a Force Center video because more cool things are coming to the channel in 2023. And you can also take a look at the live Q&As maybe that you missed. Go back and check the In Memoriams or Databank Brawls or a fun way to check the old ones there. We got the great animated one from Brian Ward. It's on the channel as well. A lot is there for you now. But more things are on the way. We are asking your help to get to 7,000 subscribers. We're about 6,650 right now at the time of this recording. So you guys have stepped up. Our numbers are growing. We really appreciate it. So that is our ask. Dun, dun.
Yeah. And we will have our live Q&A on YouTube with some specific announcements about what is coming. And that is Friday, right? This Friday, December 17th. Did I do that right? No, I didn't. That's the wrong day. Friday, December 16th, 4 p.m. Pacific. You can also watch it the next day. But join us live Friday, December 16th, 4 p.m. I'm keeping track of too many things, Ken.
Oh, man, you know, you and I are looking at our calendar for 2023, and I have that mindset of that's next year, but next year is really 2 weeks away or so. So, yeah.
Yes, we are like a blink away from heading to London for Star Wars Celebration. Lots of exciting things coming in 2023, but let's look at our excitement in the moment, the way Qui-Gon would want us to. Here, now, we have two questions from Twitter and two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter and Jonathan Steelflex. I write down the names and sometimes I don't fully take them in. Steelflex, that's great. Jonathan says, hey there all, do you believe we will be seeing a live action creation of a lightsaber? I know we have seen Luke tinkering with his hilt in deleted scenes from Return of the Jedi and in the 2002 Clone Wars series, as well as the Cartoon Network Disney Clone Wars. But what about live action? If so, where? This is a great question because I love lightsabers. I love lightsaber building. So I'm excited to hear if you're excited, Ken, and where you think it might happen live action.
I'm very excited. This is a great question, Jonathan Steelflex. I love a last name that could be a username online or could be an actual name. Steelflex, that's powerful. yeah, and when you stop and think about it, I'm truly surprised we haven't seen a live-action creation of a lightsaber yet. You know, I get Mando, maybe it's not necessarily the place. Maybe Grogu could have. Maybe Grogu still can. But I'm even including the movies in that, in this modern era. And also, by the way, I want to also, I thought about this too. I also kind of mean the prequels. Like, I'm surprised we didn't spend time with that. Clearly, George had some thoughts about it. Thus, the stories that emerge in the Clone Wars a few years later. So that's a good thing there. What's your thoughts on it not being in the prequels?
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because I feel like there's so much world building that Lucas was interested in, which is where Clone Wars, you know, comes from, that didn't make it in. But like the sort of the lightsaber... there's so much in the prequels about lightsaber loss. Right. Maybe it's because the prequels are ultimately a tragedy that is focusing only on lightsaber loss and not lightsaber creation. Because, you know, we have Kenobi losing his first blade in The Phantom Menace. We have Kenobi making a big deal to Anakin about the weapon is your life and Anakin's first blade getting chopped in half. But yeah, there's no and we'll go on a journey or even really acknowledgement of, you know, creation. So I think that I'm going to put that in the category of it's one of the things that builds tragedy. All loss, no creation in the prequels.
That's a great way to look at it there. As far as where I think it might happen, I mean, you got some, I guess, obvious answers here. You know, Ahsoka, maybe she already has blades, but there's an opportunity rebuilding, tinkering. Who else along her path might need a blade? That's the spot. But I'm interested in the Acolyte, right? Because very interesting to see. Do dark side version of that. We know about bleeding the blade now, all that kind of stuff. But you also have a character described as, what, a former Padawan, kind of returning to the fold, whether that's the Jedi Order or not, whether they left the Jedi Order or not. I know there's different ways to take that description. And just kind of seeing maybe they have to rebuild one or fix the one they had, or maybe they left one. I love those two spots as locations, and maybe shows and movies that we have yet to even hear about or dream about. And what I love, though, is that thanks to some of the animated shows that Jonathan's mentioned and more updated takes in the books and comics in this modern era, the building of a lightsaber has real added meaning for me as a fan. You know, you very much understood from Return of the Jedi that Luke building his own meant a lot. In fact, we did that Force Center scene by scene of that great catwalk conversation, Return of the Jedi, deleted scene or not. You know, you knew it was important. But even as a kid, I don't know about you, Joseph, but I took it much more. And I know you've always been kind of keen about the Jedi and Jedi lore. And I was more interested about the stormtroopers falling off of high places, I guess. But so maybe it's my journey. But even as a kid, I took it much more that the trial and the importance of Luke building his lightsaber was that he knew how to shop for parts and make it work. Not the personality, not the things that kind of emerge later. Well, now the Kyber crystal means more to the story and to me now as a fan. And I have a better understanding of the individual nature of the process and the blade. So all that to say, I would love to see it explored in a show like The Acolyte. That's my choice, but we'll see where it's coming. And I think it will come.
Yeah, I think it will come eventually because it is so rich. Everything that's been set up in the animated side and the publishing side from comics to books is so rich. And I think it's because of exactly what you're talking about. It's all storytelling about who the character is. It's fun world building, right? But everything from finding your Kyber during the era of Ilum, being the Jedi or other Force users' primary location, and knowing there's... Now, with even with Andor, like, what exactly is a Sky Kyber? How is that different? Is it different? But then learning the physical construction, getting the materials, going to, is this an era, you know, post the Galactic Civil War where, hey, Ilum's not a place to get Kyber crystals these days. Where do you get them? And it's so much about testing the character of who they are, and then the bleeding of them, and even the ritual that Vader is sort of sent on to find a Kyber to take from a Jedi, you know. Mm-hmm. All the stories that we do have in animation and publishing are revealing of the character in the world, so that's what's so exciting about it. And yeah, I think I love that deleted scene it lived of Luke. I'm always amused because the captions, when he's just playing with it a little bit, say twittering. So it looks like Luke's kind of adjusting maybe the length of his lightsaber blade and posting a witty comment on Star Wars social media at the same time, maybe. But yeah, I always love the lightsaber stuff. Like you're talking about when I first got to really absorb Vader saying, you know, so you've constructed a new lightsaber, you know, your powers are complete. It was so cool. And I was so happy for Luke. And I kind of didn't get what it meant. Like, my dad was, you know, a car guy and he could fix things and make things. So I think I kind of took it as like, wow, you can build a bench.
Right.
You finished woodshop class. You are powerful. Like, that's the way I took it. And then as I got older, it's like, what is that about? And I remember somebody gave me the visual dictionary. I'm sure it's somewhere in the expanded universe books and that. But in that very first visual dictionary, it shows the Kyber crystal and says you can only place the crystal in the right place with the Force. And I was just over the moon. It's like, that's it. That's the answer to that Vader line that it's not. You know, hey, nothing against great craft personship of being able to build things, right?
Right, right.
But that idea that it is something that takes focus and talent to do as a Jedi. It takes a relationship with the Force to place it, to bleed it, to become one with it, to forge this, that there's something kind of larger and mystical about it other than, wow, you found all the right metals and you put them together in the right order. Good job.
Good job, you. You tinkered. I love that in 1983, you said you were really happy for Luke. Like, good job, Luke. Dad has it. He might kill you with it, but good job.
Well, he does just get his everything handed to him in Empire Strikes Back. And I was just rooting for Luke. And you know, at the time, I was so young and I didn't understand how media worked. I'd fight with my brothers. Like, I think Luke's going to figure it out. I think he's going to become a Jedi. My brother would be like, nah, he doesn't have what it takes. Like, from an adult perspective, of course he's going to evolve. But we're just watching it like it's real life, you know? And you don't know if your friend's going to do good at kickball that day. In the same way, I was like, is Luke going to be a Jedi? I don't know.
See, this is fascinating because this is a separate conversation. Sorry, Jonathan, never go to another side. I love Star Wars in context of the time of you got 3 years to wait. And so this, when Luke shows up dressed in all black, Return of the Jedi, you don't know. You and your brother might be nudging you in the theater going, told you.
I think I've mentioned this before. He ordered the storybook like months in advance and it showed up at school. I don't know why I didn't have school. He called me from school because he read like the first act and then stopped himself. And he's like, Luke Skywalker is a Jedi. he told me over the phone. I was like, yeah, that's amazing. Anyway.
That's fantastic. Oh, I love that.
Spent a lot of time rooting for Luke and his lightsaber twittering.
As you should. And all this to say, like, I don't think it wasn't that this one wasn't present. Some of the bigger themes around lightsabers weren't present even in Star Wars, A New Hope, when Kenobi's handing that blade over a Jedi. The perspective of number one, you and I are kids, but of different era and how you take things in. I love how deep it is because it just makes so much sense. This is the weapon of a Jedi. This is what you would expect from what they mean.
Yeah. And I just rewatched that Trials of the Darksaber episode. With Kanan teaching Sabine to use the Darksaber, and you know that stuff about like there's a bond with the Kyber crystal, and you know the energy is kind of coming from you, and you're it's directing through the Kyber crystal. It's all about directing energy, and like it's much more spiritual ideas are it's so interesting. And I think all the modern storytelling of constructing or bleeding lightsabers and finding kybers all taps into that. So I think there could be some great storytelling with it. A couple of the places that I think it could pop up. I mean, in a way, I feel like maybe we've crossed that bridge with Grogu, but you never know. I got an image of Grogu making a light whip, like the character from the High Republic, Nestor Rowe, or Grogu making just some. Yeah, everybody had those jokes when Kylo's blade was first revealed of like, you know, it ignites and there's 18 different blades. Yeah. There's something about Grogu just makes like the most aggressive blade possible. Well, that cracks me up.
Whatever version of Grogu, like the Grogu that eats frogs, steals eggs and cookies. I don't know if I want him to have a light whip.
No.
I want. Ow! Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, the Grogu who helps cranky Rancors take a nap, he might be more responsible with light whips. Skeleton crew, I'm intrigued by just this kind of big, quick picture question of will any of the kids be force sensitive? Is that something the show is interested in exploring? Of what is it to be discovering? You know, you're a teen and you're kind of discovering you're force sensitive and you don't really know where to go or what to do with that. That's a story that's been told a lot in Star Wars, so not necessarily in that era. So that could be a place for it. But I think the biggest one is Ahsoka. There was that footage that we were lucky to see at Star Wars Celebration that showed a flash of Professor Yang, I believe, or a very similar robot, the robot that is very, very, very old and helps younglings with building their lightsabers after they've got their kyber crystals. So I think Filoni being obviously involved in the Gathering arc has a real interest in that. He's been so invested in the meaning of Ahsoka's different blades. So the idea of her needing a new one, if Ahsoka and Sabine are indeed searching for Ezra, if Ezra needs a new one, if they find Ezra and he's like, great, I've been training five kids, you know?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of interesting possibilities and the presence of Yang is really interesting to me.
You know what? I'm gonna be honest. I actually totally forgot that. That's a great reminder. Good fun.
Yeah. So I'll hold out hope, but I'll accept if it isn't there. Any final thoughts on this one?
No, lots of process and things. This is a great question to start us off because so much to it.
I was so focused on the light side. I was so focused on seeing somebody maybe in a different era without the guidance trying to figure out how do I get a kyber crystal? How do I put this together? I hadn't thought about the acolyte and there's a part of me that is like, I'm equally excited to see the bleeding ritual in live action storytelling. And I think that's something that could be in the acolyte.
It is visceral in the comics with Vader. It's some of my favorite stuff from back in the day. So yeah, that could be good.
Yeah, yeah. And in Rise of Kylo Ren. That's great stuff. We're going to move on to our next question from Twitter and from Ross Squatch. Ross says, your crew talks about putting on a Star Wars property just to have something on in the background. What is a Disney era non-movie product that you don't find yourself rewatching even as background noise? Hashtag watch all, retain none. Love the show and thank you all for the hard work. Thank you, Ross, for the fun question. I think we should start out with clarification. I think sometimes we're all very aligned, you and Jennifer and I, and then every once in a while there's something we're not as aligned on. You watch Star Wars for background stuff, right? And that I'm almost jealous. I would like to, but I can't. I have friends who watch movies in the background and they're half having a conversation and they half tune in for their favorite line, just like I can't do that. I want to be all in when I'm watching something narrative. Every once in a while, like, my wife is, you know, knitting, and usually that's fine, but every once in a while I'm like, this isn't a knitting show, I need my entire attention. So I struggle with background watching, but it's a thing for you, so I'd love to hear about it.
What's interesting, the kind of reverse, this is only emerged recently, is when it comes to like music and like just a playlist of songs or something like that, I used to be able to put that on and just have that in the background while I work. Now I can't. Not just because I have a cheap plug music show, Pop Rock and Radio on Mixcloud, because I'm picking out, scouting out songs, but I find it really, I just can't concentrate on the two, when I'm like writing or anything, like I have to, that's silent, but you know, so that's almost the reverse. Yeah. As far as just watching in the background, I think it's just such comfort. It's such, you know, I especially, it's weird because I came from a movie news kind of collider and Screen Junkies and Schmoes and all that kind of stuff. And I think people think it's a running bit with me, but I just don't sit down and watch a lot of movies and shows. I just really don't. So it's about comfort with me. And so it's like, put on the Lord of the Rings. I sometimes do sit and watch all 4 hours of a director's cut. Other times it's like, great, now I can do some work because Frodo's just doing his thing and I can check in. And it's like a little comfort and familiarity. What I, you know, it sounds cheesy. I know this sounds cheesy. But it's like hanging out with friends. Like Luke, Leia, and Han are here. Chewie's here. I'm good. I can get my stuff done on Saturday. I think that's where it starts as far as that. Yeah.
No, I think maybe the thing that I can relate to the most is I love listening to audio to go to bed, in particular old radio shows. There's a couple of Doctor Who audios, and like, yeah, I put on my Friends. I think there's a time in high school, I think 10th grade, I mostly fell asleep to a restaurant at the end of the universe.
Good stuff.
I do that sometimes for audio, but there's something about this, the visual medium, that's not the same for me, but I totally get that. Just that having your friends there with you, kind of being immersed in, having a world around you that is familiar and joyful.
Yeah. Yeah. But as far as, so this question, from Ross, about what, Disney or non-movie products. So I'm assuming that we're talking Star Wars, right? I don't have the full Disney Plus catalog to choose from here, right? That you don't find yourself rewatching. This is going to be weird. I don't rewatch The Last Jedi a lot anymore. One, I think it does work on some levels that it is at times too deep to just have on the background, where I am like you, I want to sit and take it in. I'm always convinced I've missed some corner of the theme I want to explore more, right? Last Jedi has continued to be very rewarding in terms of life lessons and what it does for Star Wars. If I'm scrolling, and I know we said, Ross said non-movie product, but I'm starting here because I'll scroll and I'll scroll past it. It's really weird. I found myself, I haven't watched it in full in a little bit. So I'll start there.
Yeah. I mean, it's a heavy film. There are moments of joy and fist pumping, but it is much like Empire. It is learning your lessons and surviving is the victory, you know? Mm. So it isn't a fist pumping, you know, let me watch that Ewok, you know, drum on those helmets, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why Rise of Skywalker is a movie it's a background movie, but it's a movie I sit and watch from start to finish a lot. And I have trouble leaving that one on the background. Sometimes it's like, ooh, I just want to, I just want to see, I just want to hear Bolio say win the war. I'll just put that on. And then you know, I've watched the whole movie. I think a little bit. There's sometimes I'm like, I want to see Tally Lynch and the A-Wings take. Oh, that's a defeat. You know, that's pew, pew. Ooh, like So there's a lot going on there. But as far as non-movie product, that's a tough one because it might be looking at the shows. Like, I don't know. I almost feel like I'm slagging on the shows. Not, but like Clone Wars, I don't have it on the background. I love Clone Wars Report going in. But I don't put those ones on a lot. I'll just have that going on.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. I don't know if that answered your question exactly, Ross, but that's where I go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I have tried to have some Star Wars on the background in the Disney era. They have, on Disney Plus, they've released that Galaxy of Sounds, which is like the sort of the themed episodes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They have the biomes where you just fly over. They have the vehicle fly-throughs. I've tried to put those on in the background to have that, just the warm blanket of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I've tried to put that on when I'm exercising in my living room, during the cycles where I've been writing a lot of those forward letters, or sometimes I just need to clean the apartment. But even those, Ken, I end up sitting down like, what if I miss something while we're flying over Hoth? I'm obsessive. I really want to rewatch Obi-Wan. I want to rewatch Book of Boba Fett. I want to rewatch Mando Season 2.
Yeah.
I deeply, deeply want to rewatch Obi-Wan, and I could just watch an episode a day at lunch, but mm-hmm. I haven't yet because I want to see what it's like if you watch it in a short, compacted time with mm-hmm. your entire whole focus. So Obi-Wan is almost like the total opposite end of what Ross is asking.
Mm.
I think for me, if the Star Wars that I definitely do want to rewatch, but I probably feel the least pull right now is Star Wars Resistance. Absolutely loved everything that it had to offer. It is beautiful. There are great Star Wars themes. But I think for me, it's like, I wanted it to connect even more with the sequel trilogy. I wanted the show itself to blossom into being sort of as tied to everything as the Clone Wars and Rebels are. And I think there's nothing about Resistance that I dislike. Resistance is exactly what it tells you it is, and it does it extremely well, and it's very enjoyable. But I think I have this little pang where, like, I wish that the sequel era had that animated show that's that kind of perfect match, the way Clone Wars is for the prequels and Rebels is for the OT.
I really agree with that. And as someone who really enjoyed a lot of what Resistance was doing, and we was doing a rewatch of that too recently before we started the Clone Wars too. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I can feel that. I can get you. Dolza gets you.
But maybe I should put that on in the background because it is really fun and I do like the characters and it does look beautiful. So maybe I'll give Resistance a try.
I want to put one that I do watch a lot in the background and it's just as comfortable. It's Empire of Dreams. There's just some about it. I love docs and everything like that. And I love docs. There's a lot of documentaries and docuseries that don't use narrators anymore. And I get it. It's kind of the sign of the times and you can tell fascinating stories versus via documentaries without a narrator. But there's just something about hearing that guy's voice saying 20th Century Fox and the way it's just comforting. And just hearing that story, Alan Ladd Jr., rest in peace, has the most unintentional ASMR voice in the history of the world. It's just relaxing to hear his story. And even though it's a story of Lucasfilm told through the eyes of Lucas and Lucasfilm, at times there's honest parts in there, but other times it's fascinating to hear the different versions. The Han I know stuff is not 100% true to the doc's tale, but you're there for it. It's fascinating. And I just love having that on and I check in with that.
I think about that one a lot. There's so many clips. I love when somebody's interviewing Harrison Ford and asking him like what it meant of Star Wars' success. And he rubs his hands together. He's like, great. Now we can get to work. I love that.
He's got that early 2000s Harrison haircut during it.
Yep. And that it's just endlessly fascinating that it is a documentary made by Lucas. So some of the familiar conflicts that we're familiar with definitely have a Lucas's take perspective. Mm-hmm. But then also he's cast himself as Vader. And it's like this victory lap where he's also like, it happened to me.
Yeah. Yes.
The same way Anakin fell, I fell. But also I'm really proud of this. It's fascinating that a person would choose Yeah. To do that and make that statement, you know?
Yeah. Empire Dreams is one of my favorites. It's just, I always do the Kasdan. I wanted Han to die. I heard a lot of people do that one too. It's classic. But in Irving Kershner's, I had smooching. That's all I had, that whole bit. And the tale. Then you find out the truth, the more truer tale of the Han I know stuff. They cut Carrie out of that decision making, and she was rightfully pissed and confronted both of them. There's a lot more to it that's on tape that didn't make that doc, but that becomes the story. I just said action and Harrison, go with what your instincts. That's not exactly what happened, but it's the legend and it's what it is there. So it's fascinating.
Anyway, we'll have to do a full episode sometime on Empire Dreams, because man, we love that. Anyway, look at us struggling, Ross, to tell you what we don't watch, because
we watch it all,
and then when we don't watch it, we spend a bunch of time feeling bad that we aren't watching it. I guess that's why we do this podcast. All right, any final thoughts, Ken?
No, I'm going to go watch Empire Dreams right now.
And I'm going to go watch Resistance. It'll be great. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with our questions from our patrons on Patreon. Back in a moment.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back with more Cues of the Force. We're going to questions from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Jay. Jay says, as a viewer of this space fantasy, we can easily take droid emotions like 3PO's anxiety or B2's depression as storytelling devices. But in the reality of Star Wars, what is the purpose of such extreme negativity in a droid? Programming them to be upbeat and cheerful seems the goal in a product designed to make sentient life easier, but why bake such harsh human psychology into a glorified vacuum? Is it a learned behavior, part of some mega-processing chip designed to create a bond between the organic and the robotic? Even still, I can see a full return line at Droids R Us of folks requesting a more boring model. Note, none of this is meant to be disrespectful to droids. I love them. Just a thought experiment. Smiley face. Jay, thanks for the smiley face and the droid investigation. This is a really, really fun idea. And I think I'm sure that there have been many stabs taken at it in many various lines here or there in books, comics, all sorts of things. I don't think there is any one like very clear agreed upon, this is how droids get made, this is why they have personalities. Mm-hmm. Big picture answer. I'm sure there's lots of little ideas. I'm sure Pablo Hidalgo has slipped many thoughts into various small fonts of visual dictionaries, but I kind of approach this is it's one of the fun questions of Star Wars. I want to start there, Ken. Do you feel like there is an answer, or do you feel like this is one of those fun discussion points of Star Wars?
In all my years of watching Star Wars, I don't feel as though I know that there is one answer, and I kind of don't want there to be, but this is a wonderful question. I've said before, my relationship with droids has changed over the years, and I think Jay's right that we do get a 3PO. That's his character. That's what he is, and it's needed for the story, but it's also very much of the Star Wars saga. So I think it's a fun, absolutely fun question to explore because I hadn't spent a lot of time on it.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question to explore. And I agree, as viewers, you know, it can be storytelling devices. But I also think it's, you know, there's this element of comedy to it, right? Because anytime that we put human attributes onto something that is not human, there is an element of comedy, right? We feel that way with the animal characters like Rocket Raccoon, right? We feel that with Garfield, with, you know, if you put a googly eyes on a melon and suddenly give it human properties. There's this element of comedy because I think it's by separating it from ourselves, mm-hmm. we can kind of look at our own foibles and go, why? Yeah. Almost exactly what Jay is asking about the actual in galaxy answers. I think a lot of it is there for storytelling device, but also to just sort of facilitate through this light touch of comedy, this deep philosophical question of why are we like that? Why do we obsess on those things? Is it learned behavior or is it baked into us? Is that just who I am or can I choose to have a better attitude today? All those kind of stuff, I think, is reflected in that's what's charming about the droids from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, I put a note down here. This question is absolutely a pro Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Marvin the Paranoid Android.
Absolutely.
I think Adams was playing not only the Star Wars of it all, but just space robots in general. So fascinating. You and I thought of, I think we're in the same ballpark where, you know, in terms of like how, maybe there's official answers out there, but why? I there's a little bit of this, looking at the mega processing chip that is, possibly feeding off the world around it. You got the tech seems like it is a little AI component to it. So there's a little bit of a learned behavior part where it made me think, and I think you were touching on some of the same stuff there. Perhaps it is our behaviors that are programming them. And these droids on a general scale are mirrors. And maybe we need to look at ourselves to ask why they're asking these questions and acting like this.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, really great. And I think that there is this big question of nature and in nurture, mm-hmm. Particularly when in the era that I was going to college and taking a lot of social sciences, that term was everywhere. And I think my own opinion is that in human reality, it's some of both. Mm-hmm. Some stuff is DNA. Some stuff is totally our environment. And I kind of think that's just I think that's it with the droids, too. You know, I think I think some of the emotions that we see from droids that make them funny, that make them charming, that make them feel real, anxiety, depression, anger, loneliness, they're kind of wrestling with them in the same way that the human characters are of like, right. they're bad in abundance. They're bad if they're entirely limiting your choices, but they're also just reality, right? They exist and they need to be, you know, dealt with. I like the idea that from a sort of a nature perspective of, you know, did somebody code 3PO to be just absolutely neurotic, you know?
Yeah.
I have the headcanon. I like the idea that they're programmed for learning and adaptation. You want them to learn how to do their skills, right? Maybe the an emotion is baked in, you know, but it can't be controlled. Like this idea that maybe, you know, I know that's kind of changed over the years of whether Anakin built 3PO and now it's more he reassembled him. Mm-hmm. Where every 3PO's programming started out, right? That somebody's like, well, a protocol droid is supposed to be very concerned about etiquette.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that clearly tipped over into 3PO is very, very, very concerned about etiquette and absolutely everything else. He's like, ah, I see. My programming is be concerned. Yeah. So I like the idea that it could start as a sensible programming idea, but then grow and adapt, you know, in this sort of Star Wars vision that, you know, what is organic and sentient can't be contained.
Mm. No, I love that. Especially with 3PO, that would make sense, right? Well, my job, my task is to worry about the rules.
Exactly.
Worry so, is baked into me.
Han, I have been programmed to despise Han Solo's approach to life. Yeah.
Just the way, you know, technology work in this galaxy far, far away, it just makes sense that even if a Treadwell droid started out just thinking about ones and zeros, it's going to adapt and learn. And that's one of the things, you know, there's a lot of conversation to have maybe around L3 and how L3 came off and some of the decisions made. I understand that. And we've had those discussions and will again. But I personally love L3. Number one, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. I think it's great to have her in Star Wars. But two, I told you, I was one of the ones who just kind of thought, yeah, R2's got a personality, 3PO's fun and kind of annoying. I don't buy a lot of figures of him. And here's L3 to make me ask some questions about what I thought about it. It was effective on me. And again, I know there bigger real world issues around some of the decisions. But I listened to L3 when L3 was talking because it just was interesting. It was a different, little bit of a different take for me of hey, you built us, you put us here. And then after that, maybe you can't control it as much as you think. And maybe you got to look at us differently.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think that there is almost like Douglas Adams pulls it out and makes it explicit, makes it a joke that, you know, certain robots have just, you know, this devastating, you know, programming. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's kind of in there in Star Wars that like whatever the intention was, they roll off the line with really different attitudes. And so we see some characters sort of wrestle with the like, okay, if they really are unique, if they really do have personalities, and their personalities grow and change in response to their experiences, if we don't wipe them, that kind of leads us to an L3 perspective that they aren't actually different. They are, you know, on some level, luminous beings, I guess. We can get into that larger conversation. But I love that that Star Wars does spend some time with the nurture part of the equation of like experiences change droids. And if you don't wipe them, that makes a difference, right? Like that said specifically about like R2 of just like, he hasn't been reset at all, you know? So these are all his life experiences making him like that. We get the same vibe with Chopper. I think that's there with B2, you know, some of the droids with the most personality are the ones who've just seen a lot, experienced a lot. I don't think B2 was as, you know, bummed out or needy when he was getting what he needed, which was to please his family that he loved by hauling the bleep out of things. He did a great job. And right at the end of the day, it's like, you hauled the hell out of that B2. And he went to his little charging bed for a much shorter time, proud of himself. And then things changed. Life changed. He's going through a midlife crisis, right? I mean,
totally. Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I think the other part of this for me is like, yep, I think there's a nature element where they come off the line with a little bit of maybe an intended personality, but it grows, it changes based on their experiences. And then I think it's a really interesting question that Jay raises about, you know, emotional qualities, you know, positive, negative. Wouldn't you want a droid who's just got a really good attitude? Yeah. You know, I when I think about emotions we call negative, it's because what are they going to lead us to? What are they going to stop us from doing that we want to do? Mm. And I love that story with 3PO in particular, right? 3PO is this great source of comedy for being incredibly true to his programming, concerned about everything. And then it's that question of, is that going to stop 3PO from doing what 3PO truly wants to do? And that's what's so beautiful about a story in Rise of Skywalker, right? Of like,
yeah,
he knows he has to do this. This is terrifying. This is the kind of thing that for years he's been yelling at other people to turn around and run away, right?
Yeah.
But he doesn't let that, his anxiety, mm-hmm. stop him from making the choice that he truly wants to in Rise of Skywalker. And I feel like that's such a tribute to 3PO and to droids.
I think it is. Look, in my many rewatches of Rise of Skywalker, which I've been recently, it's one of the things I will obviously defend that film stand on that hill. But that Rey moment where she's like, you know, no one knows the odds more than you. It's a beautiful moment for me as a Star Wars fan. This droid, his whole existence, whether he's been, you know, rebooted and put new memories put in and wiped clean, all the stuff. That's kind of a human thing, right? You're going to doubt yourself if everyone's been treating you a certain way, I think. And to have one person, even just one person, put a belief in you and say who you are is what we need right now. Oh, it's a powerful moment for 3PO and for us for 42 plus years at the time of the movie, living with this droid who at times was annoying, at times was goldenrod that needed to be pulled along, other times needed to be shut up. You got one person to say, yeah, no. You are the answer. You know, you've built for this, and I believe in you. I'm your friend. I think it's powerful. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the power of it is the respect that, you know, mm-hmm. actually listening to 3PO, but also like nobody's forcing this on you, 3PO. We are asking this, but we are also asking, you know the odds. This, mm-hmm. we don't have another way to do this, and you know that truth. So what do you want to choose, 3PO? Is such respect. And he could have said, screw it. It's been a good run. Take me home to R2.
Baba would have laughed. Yeah, screw it. Yeah, it would have been.
Yep. Yeah.
A couple of five. You said Chopper. I would love young Chopper Saves the Day, some kind of one-off story of some fresh off the assembly line pilot. Who then goes through a lot. I mean, Chopper goes through everything. And I think that is a lot of what's there between him and R2, just why they are who they are. They've seen it all and they remember it all and they've adapted.
Yeah, I forgot that great moment when we first visit the Syndulla family home and the Y-Wing that he crashed in during the Clone Wars is still there. And Chopper is just staring at it. There has to tell, I believe, Ezra, like, yeah, he's still got a lot of issues with that.
Yeah.
It's like this poor little droid's living with trauma, you know?
It's serious stuff. It's fun stuff. It adds depth. I'd love to see more of that. Silly answer, though. I also like the idea at some point one droid was too happy and that got annoying. And so the Droids RS company started reacting to customer reviews and made more anxiety-ridden depressed droids. Like, all right, this is what you want. This is what you get. You're going to get this.
I think I'd rather have a droid who told me in the morning that they also had a bad night charging and their knee hurts also. I think I would prefer that to a droid who's like, another great morning. Here's your coffee. I would lose my mind.
Again, go to Douglas Adams, those automatic doors that are like, hello, welcome. Yeah.
It is my pleasure to serve you today, right? great stuff. Very fun and deep question, Jay. Thank you so much. Move on to our final question from Robert Meadows. Did you have more droid thoughts?
Oh, no, we better wrap it up here. I'll talk about droids all day, which, by the way, 5 years ago, I don't think I would have been like, let me talk about droids all day.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's some rewards to digging in, right? And there's been great droid storytelling the last few years, I think.
Indeed.
So we're moving on to our final question from Robert Meadows. Robert says, greetings all. What do you think Qui-Gon would have thought of the Mortis gods? They offer a unique view of the Force and what true balance means. What say you, Ken? What say we? Let's start here with, I think we can definitely discuss, you know, if Qui-Gon, when he was flesh and bone and still on this mortal plane of Star Wars before he became one with the Force, if he had discovered and gone to Mortis, what he would think of it. We can definitely have that conversation. But I want to start with the Qui-Gon spirit question of the Mortis arc. So some of the visions that are seen in the Mortis arc are explicitly manipulations of the sun, of the character, the sun, right? That's not really Shmi, right? Qui-Gon, I think, is left open to interpretation. And we have that line later in the Yoda arc where Yoda has been hearing Qui-Gon's voice and is worried about it and asks Anakin, didn't you and, you know, Master Kenobi report that you saw Qui-Gon? And Anakin's like, yeah, but we just assumed that that was, you know, a vision born of Mortis because everybody knows Jedi or nobody talks to us from the beyond. So we assume that's what it was. So we have Anakin's take, which, you know, part of which we know, obviously, that indeed people can retain their identity and talk to other people from beyond. But where do you land on your interpretation of Qui-Gon's spirit in Mortis, if that is truly Qui-Gon or if that is some representation of Qui-Gon conjured by Mortis?
I especially, and this includes the Obi-Wan Kenobi series now, but I think especially the thing you're highlighting later on in the Clone Wars show itself, where the writing team and staff and Filoni and everyone kind of the fact they even revisited it, and not so shocking, and it's Star Wars and, you know, it's the lore and all that stuff. But the fact that it's still like Yoda going, hey, got a question about that. I lean towards there was an actual part of Qui-Gon there that it was not played for tricks with Kenobi. It's been a little bit since the Clones report, so I don't remember his exact words. I should have watched that again this morning. But nothing comes off false and tricksy, right, with Kenobi?
No, there's nothing that I can remember that's false and tricksy. I think he's saying very sincere things about trying to guide Obi-Wan and trying to guide Anakin. I think his presence is very much like future Force spirits. And that personally is the way I lean, particularly because they're wrestling with it in that later Clone Wars arc with Yoda being like, this is impossible, right? And Anakin being like, yeah, it was outside of our scope of understanding, so we came up with this rationalization. Yeah. And I think it's a half-true rationalization that, like, obviously, Qui-Gon is not able to fully physically appear before Yoda. Clearly, the recipient of a discussion with the Force spirit needs to be in the right place, like we've seen demonstrated lots of places, but in the Kenobi show in particular. So I do think, like, the power of Mortis, its connection to the Force, it being a wellspring, a emergence, allowed Qui-Gon to fully appear. But I do feel like it is Qui-Gon. There's not, because there isn't anything tricksy about it.
And I got to tell you, I think at the time when the Mortis arc aired in the years after, I think I just went the way of Anakin. That was a lie. But then when you analyze it, like we did, but even now, yeah, it's definitely different energy than the Shmi vision, huh?
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah,
and Ahsoka sees her future self, which feels like, you know, not Mortis playing tricks on her, but you know that Mortis conjures visions, presences. Maybe that's Ahsoka from the World Between Worlds. Who knows?
Yeah, could be.
Yeah, and I like you said, it's been a little while since we covered it. There might be a Filoni quote out there saying rubber stamp. Yes, no. I don't remember, but I like that idea. Okay, so with that out of the way, let's imagine, per Robert's question, Qui-Gon's zipping around the galaxy, trying his best to be aware of the living force. What do you think his reaction to Mortis would be?
Here's what I wrote down. Oh my God. And I think you would have been in tune with it.
Look at those gods.
Look at those gods. I think you would have been in tune with it very fast. Even what Robert's saying here, it's, you know, what true balance means and this unique view of the Force, but maybe more of a, I don't want to say pure vision, like this is the definitive version, but I think you would have been in tune with it. Right? Cosmic versus living, nighttime versus daytime, just what was going on Mortis. You got the sun and the daughter, but you know, you got these beautiful days and these devastating nights, and they both existed in concert with each other. And the fact that there was just kind of no hang-ups by the father when it came to investigating the prophecy, Qui-Gon, his relationship to prophecies, Dooku's relationship to prophecies that changed over the years and the way it was kind of presented to younger Qui-Gon. I was refreshing my brain on some of the Rael Avaros conversations with the younger Qui-Gon going, what do you mean Dooku doesn't like prophecies? He was all about that stuff. And it's just kind of Qui-Gon's relationship with that. And then you have the Jedi Order's relationship with that. And just the fact that you have the father going, hey, I heard about that prophecy and that kid. Is that all good? I just think, you know, make it a general surface level kind of point here, but I think Qui-Gon would have been there for that and explored it. And I just think he just seems like the guy Qui-Gon was, like, he would have been, can you imagine Jin and the father, Qui-Gon Jin and the father having long walk and talks? you know, he was someone, Qui-Gon strove to follow the living force. He's someone who used science, midichlorians, to confirm the spiritual about the prophecy of the Chosen One. And I think he just would have been mesmerized by what was going on there.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. OMG, look at this virgins. I think the word that jumped out to me is validated, right? Mm-hmm, I think Qui-Gon is concerned that the Jedi are getting rigid in their decision making, but mm-hmm. that is coming from a rigidity of view of mm-hmm. the Jedi ideal is to be in a state of questioning, and as you question things, you validate things that are true but are up for reexamination, or some things that you held to be true and were clinging to are maybe we need to look at that from a different perspective now as we've learned more. Like the mm-hmm. Jedi should be in some amount of questioning, right? Yeah. And I think Qui-Gon's in that place of like, I want to question our deepest understanding of the Force. And I think he's coming to this idea of like the council has become rigid. They feel like they know everything, right? Mm-hmm. The Ki Adi Mundi's answer to everything is no, we'd know about that. And then the, you know, Mace Windu just being like, council said, and Qui-Gon, I think, being like, there are so many aspects to the Force, so many ways to look at it, so many beings who interact with it. So discovering these ancient beings who interacted with the Force so powerfully that their presence in the kind of galaxies we understand it was dangerous because they're so attuned with the Force that they went here and became a part of this vergence, you know, which is kind of the backstory the father gives. I think Qui-Gon be like, see, and I bet there's a Bendu, and I bet there's a, you know, a Blue Shaka that understands the Force in a way that we never could, that there's so much more. I think Qui-Gon would be quoting Luke from the trailer of Last Jedi. There's so much more. And this would be a validation of all of that.
Yeah, that validation, justification for a lot of things he was going through. I really love that angle too. And that's what's fast. Qui-Gon just continues to be one of the more fascinating characters, even as I get older. We said it on the show this week on the news and cues. This is the cues on the news. I go to Qui-Gon a lot more than I used to. In 99 and beyond, we're just like, teach me, Qui-Gon. What have you learned? Because you don't know the answers. You're seeking. And I love that. And I think Mortis is about that.
Yeah. And I think really, to me, I know, you know, some people love the phrase Grey Jedi and I get it's an intriguing concept, but I love Qui-Gon from the perspective of like, no, I want to be very true to the core ideas of the Jedi, which are to continue to question things with wanting to learn more, with wanting to understand more. And I think that's so what this is about. And yeah, if it was Qui-Gon, once he had encountered Anakin, I think the utter validation of like, oh yeah, no, he's totally the Chosen One. This is real important. Yeah. I think you'd like that a lot.
Yeah. That Qui-Gon quote, it's funny. It's now the lead quote on Wikipedia on Qui-Gon's page. I don't think that was always there. I think it's important to Qui-Gon's existence. That quote that's from Master and Apprentice, the turn towards the light quote.
Oh yeah, it's so good, right? Yeah, and that's such pure Jedi, right? Of like, I'm not in a game to win some cosmic war. It's the light is where we should go, so I turn to it because it's right in and of itself. Yeah,
yeah. And then the sun would be like, but no.
Yeah. Oh man, great stuff. Yeah, yeah. And I haven't finished Padawan by Kirsten White yet, but there's some great Qui-Gon stuff early in that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Any further thoughts on Qui-Gon's mind being blown by the gods of Mortis?
Look, what I love about this is maybe we get an essay or something one point of the spirit of Qui-Gon arriving on Mortis at some point would be interesting.
Oh, yeah, man. If we get season two of Obi-Wan Kenobi, that is just Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon chatting.
Oh, man.
That'd be amazing.
Hey, Qui-Gon, I got a question for you. Yes, that was me. Okay.
Okay. Was that you? Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Robert Meadows. That was a very fun question to explore. That's it for our questions, but we do have a power of the light side. Speaking of being like Qui-Gon and turning to the light simply because it is there and it is beautiful, that's what this power of the light side is about. We put out a call to patrons on Patreon to share something positive about Star Wars. Could be something, memory of seeing Star Wars with a loved one. It could be a favorite toy, or it could be how Star Wars has really helped you in a deep and important time in your moment. Our submission today is from Justin Jacobson. Justin says, for me, the power of the light side is in resisting the dark. I have never had a twin sons moment calling me off to some grand adventure, but my 30s and early 40s have been filled with times where giving into anger, resentment, bitterness, and frustration looked like a really good idea. It has given me a lot of empathy for characters like Maul, Dooku, Vader, and Kylo Ren, which in turn has opened me up to their stories as cautionary tales on why I shouldn't give in to those feelings. That is great, Justin. A literal answer to power of the light side. What is the power? Why are we drawn to it? Why do we want to celebrate it? What are your thoughts on this one, Ken?
Look, I love this one. And I really focus in on Maul, Dooku, Vader, Kylo Ren being cautionary tales. And I think they're very important to the story. And we see this a lot. Luthen Rail factors into this for me as well. What's going on in Andor. And look, it's very personal. It's very real world. I think there's some real, there's a real place for anger. There's a real place for righteous anger. Anger is a starting point. Anger to cause change, anger to get the attention needed to cause change. And these are all conversations. And it's sometimes dangerous to make Star Wars so one-to-one to the world. Mm-hmm. I think that could be just as bad as ignoring Star Wars and the lessons on the real world. But this is all personal, too. I think I'm someone who is in a privileged position to be a little less angry. So therefore, I can look at a bigger picture. And this is maybe how you change some things. Other people aren't blessed with that privilege. They are in the situation. They are in the darkness, and that's a starting point. I just think Star Wars does want us to not stick there, and it's very easy. Resentment and bitterness are things I'm struggling along, and those lead to frustration. It's that Yoda sliding scale, sliding down scale of everything leading. It continues to be one of my favorite quotes in Star Wars. And at the time, by the way, at the time, I think it was mocked a little bit in the prequels, at least sometimes some of my circles. Mocked. I think it's important stuff, and I don't want anyone to confuse me that what you're going on in your life doesn't mean my answers are right for you. And I don't want anyone to toss away anger over anything that's gone away. I just think you look at all these, the Maul, the Dooku's, the Vader's, the Kylo Ren's, all have reasons to be angry, all have reasons to make some of the decisions. But it doesn't turn out the way it could. There's some redemption in there, Anakin and Ben Solo. But it didn't have to necessarily be that way. Anyways, I'm getting deep into the real world one-on-one stuff here, but it's been on my mind. I've had a lot of conversations. That's what I do love about Luthen Rail. Luthen Rail and his speech has been taken so many different ways by people. Mm-hmm. And how you take it is how you take it. You and I take it maybe a little different than some of the other, even friends of mine. His speech is motivating some people. His speech is a cautionary tale to me. But the point is, it's getting you thinking about what's going on inside your soul. And it's the other side of Star Wars. The dark side is there. It's always going to be there. And Star Wars has a lot of thoughts on how you deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And Luthen's speech is so fascinating because, you know, it's not done. It's a signpost on his journey. No. It'd be one thing if he had ended up not making it out of season one, right? But I think that speech is going to really, it is going to mature like a fine aged cheese and it's going to take on even more complexity as we see what Luthen's journey is and his own feelings about that speech. So a little Luthen side note is going to be more and more prevalent here on Force Center because such a fascinating character. I love what Justin is saying. I think in particular with characters like Maul and Dooku and Vader and Kylo Ren, it's so great to see the storytelling of seeing what's the wound, what hurt them, and how much can we relate to the pain. I think recently getting in both the Dooku Jedi Lost, but in particular in the Tales of the Jedi, to see Dooku personally wounded, but also Dooku wounded by the true injustice of the Republic in the Jedi, of to have this power and to feel chained from using it when somebody with wealth and political protection is doing something that they can maybe get away with under the law, but is clearly immoral and painful. And for Dooku to be chained and to not do anything about it, it's got this societal wound. But then there's also this wound of like, well, what's the point of me? It's making me feel weak to just stand here and just go, I'm just an errand boy, you know? So I've been thinking about that a lot, because I think this is definitely Dooku Jedi Lost got into some of this stuff, from family and attachment perspective. But that's a real fresh look at some of the wounds. And to me, it's always important to start there with these dark side characters and say, okay, if I can relate to why they're so angry, what's the point where they make a choice, right? Say, I can't agree with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In how they respond to that anger, and I think, or that wound, and I think that's the story that Star Wars always wants to tell. You know, fear and anger are natural emotions, and they can sometimes be productive, and you need to wrestle with them. And I take the lesson of Star Wars is be careful that you don't act on them in a way that is only going to make things worse for others and worse for yourself, because it feels good and right in the moment of I have been hurt, so I will lash out. I always relate to, you know, the discussions of the dark side is it gives you focus, because I feel that when I'm angry. I'm like,
yes.
Oh, now my body is a crystal. I know exactly what is wrong, and I can express it exactly, and with energy, nothing held back, and it feels great, right? Yeah. And it's always when I'm in those spots where if I don't stop myself, I go beyond that and I lash out and I hurt someone I don't want to hurt. I hurt physically something I don't want to hurt in my life, which only hurts myself ultimately.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
I'm a breaker of things. That goes back in two or three, which is little DNA, little nature, little nurture. Little bit. And I have to cop to that, you know, a little bit of like, I am frustrated at this printer. Now this printer is out in the field and I'm office spacing it. You know, it's a little bit of a thing. Well said, sir, and what it is. And I find myself, especially with the Luthen stuff, but especially Star Wars in the last couple of years, there's a lot of things that could upset all of us. I think I find myself, I don't know if it's defensive or just, here's as simple as I can say it. With the Dooku Tales of the Jedi stuff, loved it. You and I loved it. I've had some conversations off air with people who are like, it was so nice to finally get his point of view. And I'm like, whoa, that's not the end of the story. Time out. We're not just going, finally we understand why he was, you know, in terms of lore, maybe you do. But I think these are some folks who express it in that way of like, it was just that whole like Empire point of view thing that we keep talking about, that Andor kind of, I think one of the things I love about Andor is like rip that bandaid off the wound of the Empire and be like, oh, it's not just some dock workers on the Death Star who don't know what's going on. So I get a little like, hey, keep the story going and find it. And I love what you said about at what point on their journey did they do something that you go, aha, a bridge too far. And I think that's part of the thing there. Cause I never, especially with the world and state, is it never want to take anyone's anger away from stuff that they've experienced or happy has happened to them. And I don't think Star Wars is saying that too. It's just a complete journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it is, it's the nuance in what continues to make Star Wars fascinating. I think it's the nuance of why Luthen's speech is fascinating. The empire and the tyranny that we're presented with in Andor, in my opinion, must be fought, right?
Yes.
That's why it becomes this question of like, if there comes a point where you feel like you have no other choice but to, you know, resist in some way, how do you do it without losing your soul? Because that's what happens to the Darksiders, right? Yeah. They don't lash out and go, now finally somebody has heard my perspective. I've made somebody apologize. They lash out and they lash out and it becomes their entire life and it's not productive. They don't get any of the things they want, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the story of Maul, Dooku, Vader, Kylo Ren, you know, they don't end up with the things they want. Anger doesn't event, you know, get them what they want in the end, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for me, I think anger is natural. It's going to be there. I think just trying to deny it is not wise. It's mm-hmm. how do you express it and find a way out of it? And I think it can absolutely be used to crystallize an epiphany that something needs to change, right? But yeah. how do you not live in misery? Is you anger has opened the door and you're marching in the direction you need to, right? But then how do you not just live in that anger and perpetuate it everywhere you go?
It's one of the important conversations around Anakin and the failure of the Order, maybe even some of the shortcomings of how Kenobi dealt with him that the saga still deals with. If he could have just talked to someone about being in love with Padme, could he have processed the attachments a little differently? Maybe. You don't know. And it's a space saga that's going a certain way and needs the characters to do decisions for the stories. But like, you know what I mean? Like, you look at it, I think that's a big thing I've taken away from the Clone Wars rewatch on their Clone Wars report. He had to keep it all inside, suppress it. And that only grew until the one evil wizard knew how to pull out that string.
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, when Obi-Wan says, you know, I failed you, it's like, I knew you were wrestling with stuff with your past. I knew you were wrestling with feelings with Padme. And I didn't find the way to help you. Too little, too late by the time he's in the bedroom with the pod racing poster going, you know, I had feelings for Satine. And he's like, I don't want to talk about it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that just, you know, hearing Justin's great thoughts here, it was it's really, really healing. For me, I had, you know, personal stuff that I'm not really at liberty to get into at the end of the day, not a big deal, but I had like my worst brush with the dark side in a long time this last week. I was telling Ken a little bit about it off air. But it really made me think a lot about Star Wars because I think I had a legitimate reason to be angry. Mm-hmm. And then I also knew, like, I know what long-term issues in myself that this is touching off. I was able to express them. I was able to vent them. And then I still couldn't stop being angry. And I'd done everything valuable with anger. It had opened me up. It had communicated. I had pushed back against something that I think was unfair. And then I was like really aware of it because we talk about this all the time. It's like, but now it's just really feeling good to swear and be furious. And I couldn't, I was at that point where it's like, I can't stop. How am I going to stop? And I really had to just be like, okay, just let yourself be angry. Mm-hmm. Step away from anyone or anything that you can hurt and just let it simmer. And eventually other parts of life came in, you know, went out in the world and got some things done, saw some things that made me happy. And slowly, slowly, I finally calmed down. But I was at that exact point where like, wouldn't it be good to just stay this way and keep lashing out? Mm-hmm. And I think that to me is the Star Wars story of it feels so tempting to stay in that place of righteous fury. Mm-hmm. And then once you are in that place, like we see all the Darksiders do, then they have to lie to themselves that they're still justified.
Yeah.
In their actions, right?
Yeah.
Because when Anakin has that moment of doubt when he, well, what have I done, when he takes out Mace Windu, right? And he pivots immediately to justification of like, yep, you're right. I agree with you, Palpatine. The Jedi are going to kill all the senators. Yep, I agree. So I have to wipe them out first. He pivots immediately towards obviously BS justifications for the choice he's made, you know? And I think that's the kind of danger when you anger feels good and you lead into it and you kind of know I'm not doing anything good, but you start to make up justifications for why it is okay that you're staying in that place of anger.
Quicker, easier, more seductive.
That's a shorter way.
Yeah, but isn't this how powerful those words are in 1980? Just still ring out true in Star Wars.
It is, man. And I, you know, you and I talk about that. You know, I did a joke sketch a long time ago called The Power of the Funny, where it was just combining Star Wars stuff with comedy stuff. And, you know, I've thought about comedy that way for a long time. You know, there's some jokes that are not great, but you get a big laugh quicker, easier, seductive.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So thank you, Justin. Thank you for helping me reflect on my experiences this week in the value of turning to the light side. Any final thoughts, Ken?
No, I love it. Thanks, Justin. And look, let's be honest. We, over the years, have received a lot of nice messages and support from people out there who express what we talking about, what, you know, our journey talking about Star Wars and celebrating Star Wars, what it means for you. But it's also a reminder that this is a we're a community here. And a lot of times you guys ask questions that, that hit us right when we need to as real life people, not just Star Wars fans.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think that's good for us to touch base. We get comments about being a positive podcast and a supportive podcast, and that we want to. That's a choice. We are turning towards the light, but we are humans with many emotions from grumpy to anger. And we want to be honest that those are there, too.
Indeed.
All right, that is our show. We had a great Power of the Light side. We had some great cues. Ken, where can people find us?
Well, speaking of that community, you can connect with us on Twitter at Force Center Pod. At the time of this recording, Hive Social's still down somewhere, but we are on there at Force Center. If you find us, if it gets back up, Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram as well, and YouTube, as we set up top of the show. Love to have you subscribe and join that community there. Podcast is available a lot of different spots. Just search, we'll find us. But we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter, patreon.com/ForceCenter, where you can support us directly. I say that so many times, you'd think I wouldn't stumble. And you can find me at Ken Napsok and go to my website, kennapsok.com, for more. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media. Instagram, TikTok are great options. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on Hive. As of this recording, I'm on Twitter, but we'll see. You can also find me on my YouTube channel. Just search for Joseph Scrimshaw. Or if you want to be real old school, you could go to my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for C-3PO's anxiety, this has been Cues of the Force.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.